Welcome to The Thriving Marriage, the podcast for those who want to get their spouse back in love with them and truly thrive.
You'll learn why 95% of people don't save their marriage and the secret method no one else is talking about that will change everything for you. Are you ready?
Are you ready?
Let's turn tragedy to triumph.
Here are your hosts, international marriage experts, Mark Johnston and Heather Choate.
My name is Heather Choate. I'm super pumped to be here with you guys today. Excited to share some powerful insights. My partner, Mark Johnston, our head marriage coach here at High Thrive Coaching, is still battling COVID. So we greatly appreciate your prayers for him and his family. He is doing better. Thank you, Kristen. I appreciate that. Thanks for letting me know you can hear me okay. And so we appreciate your prayers and your patience with Mark as he is recovering. So thank you for that. Today, we're going to be talking about how to end rejection in your marriage. So raise your hand if you've ever felt like you've been rejected by your spouse at some point in your relationship. So everyone with a wedding band on their hand should be raising their hand right now, right? I've experienced that. We've all experienced that at some level, and it's no fun. So today, we're going to be talking about how to end rejection in your marriage, the loneliness, the despair, the heartbreak, with our method that helps you feel safe, to feel close, to feel accepted. Before I get to that though, we're going to share our client win of the week. And this one comes from Jose. He posted this over in the Thriving Marriage Facebook group. And I love everyone who's joining me live over there right now. And Jose says, for anyone wondering if you should join the coaching program, do it. 2 months in and my wife now communicates with me like when things were good, and she's opened up on what caused her to pull away, and she has noticed the changes I've made and is starting to pull me in instead of distancing herself like she had been. It's amazing to see how fast it's turned around from her saying she loves me but is not in love with me to her now being flirtatious. And she stops just short of saying, I love you. Glad I found this program. And I know a lot of you guys saw that and you were congratulating Jose. And this is not uncommon, guys, when you have the right method and you start doing things the right way to really communicate and connect with your spouse. And I love that he said that she is starting to pull me in instead of distancing herself like she had been. And that's exactly what we're going to talk about today as we address this topic of rejection. So I had posted a poll over in the Thriving Marriage group, a question here. And I asked you guys, what do you do when you feel rejected by your spouse? And we got like 115 comments. Amazing. Like so much great feedback here. And I saw everything. I like went through most of these. I hear a lot of you guys are saying, I keep trying no matter what. I'll try even after the divorce is final. And you know, some of you are like, I'm dealing with that every single day. Some of you talk about how you're going to like work on yourself and take care of yourself. And then more often than not, I saw a lot of comments about, I'm going to give up. Like there's nothing I can do. It's super devastating. It's happening all the time. And then some of you are talking about like pout, push, to find out why they're rejecting me. I feel very, very hurt. Like another comment here, I cry for an hour. I take it super personal and I feel abandoned. I drive fast and take chances. I feel sad and depressed. I sulk. I ignore him. I try to win her back. All of these different things, like it's depression, withdrawal, so many different responses here. Like I keep showing him that I won't give up even though he's checked out. I do get pretty upset. I feel so defeated, but I don't let him see that. I try to show him kindness, understanding. I just don't feel rejected anymore as a comment here as well. So across the spectrum here, there's a lot of different responses to feeling rejection. Rejection in and of itself is just no fun, right? We put ourselves out there. Maybe, you know, we're putting ourselves out there emotionally, or maybe it's, you know, an invitation for intimacy and you just get shut down. And we all experience that in our relationships because we're not perfect and our spouse is not perfect. We don't always understand each other well. We're not always in a good, healthy place ourselves. But continual rejection or deep levels of rejection they can often lead to a feeling of hopelessness and heartbreak. And so what we're going to talk about today is how to shift out of that by doing what actually works so that you can feel close, you can feel loved, you can feel accepted by your partner. And what we do with our clients is we do this in less than 6 months, and you can do it in a way that you won't get your heart hurt. So let's dig into that, all right? So why are so many people going about saving their marriage in a way that's actually setting them up to be rejected and feel hurt? Ouch! I know that this is like hard to hear. So I'm going to say that one more time. Did you catch the way I said that there? You know, so many people are actually going about working on their marriage, trying to improve their marriage, trying to end the affair, trying to save their marriage in a way that is actually setting them up to be rejected and feel hurt. Now, of course, that's rarely the intention, but that is what's actually happening. And what's going on here, you know, Mark and I, we've helped tens of thousands of students. We have like 13 or 14,000 active students right now in our program. And so we've seen a lot of commonalities over the years, right? And with all of these different couples. And what I've often seen is that, you know, we don't even realize that what we're doing is actually creating that. We don't realize that what we're doing may not actually give our spouse any other option. And I'll explain where that's coming from here in a little bit. And we often don't even understand what our spouse is really wanting or why they are doing what they're doing. Okay. So I'm going to go into what we call our push versus pull method. How many of you guys have heard this? If you've never heard of this before, then buckle up. All right. I want you to listen and tune in here because you might just have a huge aha moment that's going to change everything for you. Okay. That's not uncommon. I've made most of these mistakes myself. I felt rejection myself, and I've gone about it the wrong ways myself, as well as, you know, many, many of our clients as well. So if you're making one of these mistakes, if you've done one of these push kind of things, then you're not alone. And having that awareness, like I said, can be a huge aha moment that can totally start to pivot things for you, because you can realize, oh my goodness, Heather, I am doing that, and that's why it's not working. Okay. So pushing is anything that is trying to push your spouse to come to you, trying to make them come back to you, trying to make them end an affair, trying to make them want to be with you again so that you can stop this rejection that you're feeling. And what happens when we go into pushing is oftentimes one of these. We are demanding. We're demanding that they work on the relationship with us. We're demanding that they go to therapy with us. We're demanding that they end the affair. We're demanding that they change. We're demanding that they stop rejecting us. All right. So if you're making any kind of demands, like you need to do this, you need to do it for the kids, you need to honor your marriage vows, all of those demands. And oftentimes we feel justified, and you may be justified, right? They may very well be going back on their marriage vows. And that's hard. And you may feel like I have a right to say, hey, you vowed to me that you would be with me through sickness and in health, for better or for worse. But the problem is that if they're already wanting out, if they're saying, I love you, but I'm not in love with you, and they're wanting, you know, a divorce or separation, or they're in love with someone else, then pushing them to honor those vows or pushing them to try to work on things is only going to do what? What is it going to do? You guys are good students here. Fill in the blank with me. It's going to push them further away. You've experienced this yourself, right? You know, imagine that there's something that you don't want to do, and you've made up your mind you're not going to do it, and someone's telling you, you have to do this thing. Is it going to make you want to do it anymore? Absolutely not. Like, we dig our heels in and we resist even more. So justified or not justified doesn't matter. Because to them, they're already out. And so you demanding them to come back is just going to make them dig their heels in more. Just like you would, honestly, if you were in their shoes, right? So the demanding does not work. What is another thing that we do in the push mode when we're trying to push our spouse? Here's a big one that's a little bit similar, but different. And this is something new that I started talking about just within like the last 6 months. And Mark's talking about it, and then I finally got it. Okay. Sometimes I'm a little bit of a slow learner. Trying to resolve deep issues too soon. So many times I see you guys here in the Thriving Marriage group. I see your comments on YouTube, on Facebook, you're messaging me, and I love talking to you guys. But I see oftentimes that you are like, okay, I gotta figure out why they're having the affair. I gotta like dig into these root issues of all the painful things that we did to each other all of these years, and we gotta solve all of these things. And the bottom line is that yes, deep root issues, deep issues, and deep wounds, they do need to be resolved, but they need to be resolved at the right time. And more often than not, when your spouse is pulling away and you're trying to like push to resolve all these deep issues, you think that if you solve those things, that that's going to solve it and they're going to want to come back to you. But what happens is that often your marriage is not strong enough to handle healing those deep issues or even talking about them, let alone resolving them and working through all of that. And so this is a little bit of a case-by-case situation. And it's really important that, like an expert, like we do here, we assess the health and the strength of your relationship. Because if we determine that right now your relationship is too fragile to handle the deep issues, then you trying to push to resolve all of them could completely break what's left of your relationship. If it's too fragile, pushing on it is just going to make the rest of it completely crumble, which is not what we want, right? I kind of relate it to like a medical thing. Say that you have a brain tumor, but then you're in cardiac arrest. Is the doctor going to go and do surgery for your brain tumor if you're in cardiac arrest? Like, no, like you would not survive the surgery. And so it's a little bit that same way. Your relationship may be at a point where it's actually in cardiac arrest. Things have become so dire, it's kind of on its last leg. And it's simply not strong enough or healthy enough to go in and do the brain surgery to get rid of the tumor. Okay, does that make sense? But that's why we're here. We, High Thrive Coaching, are the ICU for marriages. We know how to build up health and make a relationship stable enough so that it then you then can go in once it's healthy and it's stable and we've reduced a lot of the tension and they're no longer completely out the door. Or at least one foot out the door, one foot in, maybe. And then we, from there, are able to then go in and resolve the deeper root issues. So let me know if you feel like you are pushing for that as well. And is it working? Just be really honest with yourself. Is what I'm doing working? And if not, maybe I need to start to do some new things in some new ways so I get some different results. All right, the next part of pushing is manipulation. Manipulating our spouse. I cringe whenever I hear someone with these scare tactics, these manipulations, and I cringe when I think about me doing them as well. In a way, we all kind of manipulate to try to get our needs met when we're in that drama triangle that we talked about several weeks ago with Mark. You know, we've got the victim, we've got the hero, and we've got the persecutor. And what we're really trying to do is get our needs met, but we're not going about it in very healthy ways. So in a way, we're all kind of manipulating when we're not in a healthy place. And I would say most people are there. There's very few actual like intentional creators in life. Most of us find ourselves in one of those roles. And I find myself in one of those roles too, even still. It's just having awareness and saying, oh my goodness, I just stepped back into the hero role. I'm trying to rescue him, or I'm feeling like a victim here. And so I want to change that. I don't have to stay in that pattern anymore, right? But the manipulating can sound like those scare tactics, like, okay, if you go have this affair, then I'm going to sleep with whoever I want. I'm not going to come home tonight. Like, I was just talking to a client who was doing these things, right? Texting his wife saying, I'm not coming home tonight. I don't know when I'll be back. I'm not going to bring our son home. And I'm going to take the kids. You know, like all these different manipulations and sometimes even flat out threats. Like, I'm gonna ruin your credit. I'm gonna wreck you financially. I'm gonna seize your assets. I'm gonna tell your mom, you know, all these different things. And the reason why we do them is we want them to come away from like the threat to us. And that's what we think is gonna work, but does it ever work? No, it never works. And if it did work, would that be the way you actually want your spouse to come back to you? No. Because you know they're only doing it out of fear about what you're going to do, and that's not a healthy, strong foundation. That's not the foundation of a thriving marriage. So when you feel like you're in a manipulation, like maybe you don't even really recognize you're doing it because some of these things are so subconscious. So give yourself some grace. Like you just might not be aware that that's actually what you're doing, but just look at it from a higher level perspective. You know, that's what we do here as the coaches. We give you that higher level perspective. Like, oh, honey, that's actually a manipulation. And if he came back to you right now, you wouldn't really like it. Like that would not actually feel good to you. And more often than not, he's actually not going to come back. It's actually going to push him further away, right? All right, then that leads us to pleading, desperation, begging, right? Please don't go. Please give me another chance. Please, 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 please. I'm begging you. Please don't do this for the kids. I'm, you know, all of that. Like I'll do anything for you. I'm so sorry. And all of these like over-apologizing and absolute desperation trying to get them back. And we think that if we just totally maybe, what's the word, abash ourselves before our spouse and come at them with that, then maybe they'll be willing to give us a chance and that will work. But more often than not, what does it do? If someone is around you and they're coming at you with a lot of desperation, a lot of fear, a lot of tension, does that feel really safe and inviting to you? No. When we're around someone that's really desperate and tense, what do we want to do? We want to get out of there. We want to back away. Like even physically, we'll like take a step back from someone that's coming at us with a lot of fear and tension because it doesn't feel safe. And so if you're in this pleading, this desperation, even if you feel like you're doing it in like a really positive way, like I'm gonna fight for my marriage, I'm gonna give us every chance, I'm gonna show you I'm this, but it's this still the state of fear and desperation, your spouse most likely senses that. And it will not feel safe to them. And they will want to create more space from you, which then only leads to more rejection, right? You're putting yourself out there, you're trying to make it work, but your spouse doesn't feel safe. And so then you feel more rejection. All right, we also talked about, you know, in the comments, you guys talked about, I don't do anything. I just withdraw. I freeze up. I don't know what to do. So I end up doing nothing. How many people here feel like they're in that kind of a state, right? This rejection is so hard. And so I just don't know how to handle it. So I just need to like, I just feel like I gotta pull away and I feel like there's nothing I can do. Even giving up hope, right? That this rejection is hard and I don't know how much more I can handle, right? So we just pull away and we withdraw. But if you're wanting a connection with this person, if you're wanting to heal things, then will freezing, withdrawing, giving up, is that ever going to get you to where you really want to be, right? And so I get it that there's a lot of fear and it's instinctual and it kind of feels so strong, but we deal with a lot of people that are feeling those same ways. And it's a beautiful thing when you can shift out of that fear state, out of the withdrawal state, out of the hopelessness state, into actual empowerment and deciding what you really want to have in your relationship, where you really want to go, who you really want to be, and then making some empowering steps in that direction. Feels so much more than withdrawing and freezing and doing nothing. And then your marriage ends by default because you didn't do any of the positive actions. Maybe you didn't do the negative ones either, but you just kind of stayed there. And then your spouse just goes further and further away from you. All right. Another thing that we do when we feel rejected and we try to like push things to work or really not sure how to handle this rejection is expecting our spouse to read our mind. We all kind of do that at some level, and in some instances, it can be a very strong reality. Is just expecting them to know that that hurts us, expecting them to know that that is, you know, we don't feel accepted by them, expecting them to give us what we want, right? And to kind of save the day for us, right? We have this like bit of a fairy tale belief about it that our spouse should just fix everything for us. Or that they should just read our minds. And we all know that no one can read our mind, but often than not, more often than, I'm getting tongue-tied, more often than not, when we're in that mode, we just assume that our spouse knows what we want and assumes that they know what's hurtful and that they'll just provide that for us or that they should, right? And then, of course, the magic bullet. The magic bullet means I think that, you know, this one thing is gonna fix everything or that, you know, my spouse is going to ride in on our white stallion and save the day and suddenly turn everything around for me. And this is going after a lot of like the hacks and the, you know, the secrets and these like, you know, really gimmicky things out there that you think are just going to suddenly turn everything around for you. And you put your faith and your hope and sometimes your dollars into that because it sounds really nice, but it does not provide a lasting solution. Either it's like a self-help book or YouTube videos. Sometimes it's podcasts, and I'm doing a podcast right now. So, you know, that being said, you know, you just like think that that in and of itself, you're going to try to do it yourself. You're going to try to handle these things yourself. You're going to go to therapy and talk about all these problems for years and think that that's going to turn things around, or listen to the advice of your friends and your parents. And, you know, we had this like magic bullet syndrome where we feel like that's going to be the one thing that's going to save everything. And when we try to do it ourselves, more often than not, what we're getting from self-help books, we think, oh, you know, I personally read The Love Dare like 3 or 4 times. I've read The Love Languages. And I think, oh, if I just do that love language, or if I just do this like service thing, then that's going to fix everything. And we take something that's good advice in one situation, we apply it to our situation, might be completely the wrong thing. It might completely backfire, or it's just ineffective because we don't see the whole picture of how it's supposed to work, right? And so that's why it's really crucial that we get the right kind of help to navigate these challenges. All right, so I want to share a little bit of a story here, because at the beginning, I talked about how there are so many people that they don't realize that what they're doing is actually creating rejection, and that you may not realize that you're actually not giving your spouse any other option but to reject you further. And when you're in the push mode, you know, you don't like this rejection, so you're doing these things to try to stop the rejection, try to get them to come back to you, but it's actually just creating more rejection, which creates more desperation, more heartbreak, more hopelessness. And so if that's not what you want, then, you know, you've got to pay attention to what to do on the flip side. So I'm going to change the names here of some clients that I've been working with recently to Jaren and Laura. And so Jaren was the one I was talking about, was doing these scare tactics, like, I'm not going to come home, you know, like kind of like I might be sleeping with someone, I'm not going to bring our son home, you know, those kind of things. And then when those didn't really work, then he would shift to the pleading, please work on this, please do that, please don't leave me, please give me another chance, and then go into, you know, the demanding, well, you need to work on this, we need to work on this thing with my kids, and we need to do this for them, and you need to, you know, do what you promised you would do, you need to honor your vows. And then what would happen is he would say, I demand that you give me an answer, because they were just kind of in this limbo of being separated. She wasn't sure if she wanted out. She doesn't know if she wants to stay in the relationship. So then he would demand that she makes a choice, because it was too hard for him to handle, which it is hard to handle when you're going about it that way. Absolutely. It's going to create more of the drama and more of the tension and more of the rejection. And so at a certain point, you're like, yeah, you just need to give me an answer. Are you in this thing or are you out? And every time he would ask her that question and she wasn't sure, there was only one answer that she could give him, which wasn't the one he wanted, that she was out, right? There's only one option there. If your spouse is saying, I don't want to be with you, I'm not happy here, I love you, but I'm not in love with you, and now you're saying I have to make a choice, well, I'm not ready to make that choice, and so the only answer I can give you is that I don't want to be with you. And so in a lot of ways, we are actually going about it in a way that doesn't give our spouse any other option, because we're pushing them so much. It's like cornering a scared animal, you know, into a corner, and it's like you don't have any other option but to get bit. And I see that happening so often as I'm, you know, talking to you guys on Facebook and on YouTube and stuff like that. And I hear your emails and you're messaging me, and, you know, I see that you guys care a lot about your relationship, and that many of you don't even realize that you're kind of backing your spouse into a corner, and that it's really only giving them the option to bite you back. And that only then creates more frustration and more rejection, and on and on and on we go. And so let's look at this through the lens of the drama triangle for a minute before we go into what we call the pull method, what we do with our path method. So in the drama triangle, I want you to ask yourself, with this rejection that I'm experiencing right now in my relationship, and, you know, I may be doing the manipulating, I may be doing the demanding, I may be trying to resolve deep issues too soon, I may be freezing, I may be pleading, I may expect them to come in and save the day or to read my mind. So how am I showing up with what's going on right now, with this rejection that I'm experiencing from my spouse? Am I showing up as the victim? Remember, the victim is the poor me. It's all their fault. It's all someone else's fault. There's nothing I can do. I'm not to blame. They need to fix this for me. They need to do something so that I can feel better because I'm the one that's hurt here. Okay? Are you showing up as the victim? Are you showing up as the hero? The hero is the one that thinks, you know, I need to rescue them. I need to rescue my spouse because they're a victim. They've had it so hard. I've done all these things to them, so I need to rescue them from that. I need to rescue us. I need to rescue my marriage. I need to save my marriage. It's my job. I need to come in and be the white knight and save the day. And I need to help them with what they're going through. And then what happens is when the hero does this repeatedly, eventually they get to the point where they get burned out or they feel resentment about always needing to be the one that is the hero, always needing to be the one that rescues things, always needing to be the one that saves the victim. And so then eventually the hero feels resentment. And usually when the hero feels resentment about always needing to fix things, always being the one to solve things, then they often become the persecutor. They get fed up. They say, enough. I'm done. I'm sick of being the hero. And then the persecutor comes in and says, you know, this isn't right. We need to fix this. You need to fix this. And I'm going to make you fix it. And often the persecutor will go into those demands and the manipulations, the scare tactics to try to make them fix what's wrong. Okay. And then on and on we go, right? Then the victim, then they can feel like a victim when it doesn't work, and we can say, poor me. And then when we're victims long enough, then sometimes we feel like I've had enough, and then we become the persecutor, right? And so it's just this triangle that we take these different roles, and we go round and round and round and round. But the thing is it doesn't have to be that way. I just want you to check in with yourself and be like, how am I really showing up in this? Yeah, so you're talking about you freeze, or hopefully it wasn't that I was frozen. Amen to that. Seth says, Jonathan Waters says, please help. Awesome. And Seth says, yeah, it's working. Okay, awesome. So you guys can still hear and see me. Okay, good. So let me know, like, where do you guys feel like you're showing up? What role do you typically take on in this rejection? You know, I heard all three of these over in your comments. I saw the victims that are saying, oh, poor me. I just, you know, I feel so rejected. I get totally depressed and I cry for hours and I understand it's hard. Like, I'm not belittling that it's hard when you feel rejected. But, you know, if you step into that victim role, how does that play out? What kind of actions do you then do? Like, do you bring the sob story? Do you, like, you know, try to tell them that they need to fix it for you and how hard it is for you? And you play that role of, oh, poor me. Everyone needs to help me and it's not my fault and you're to blame, right? And if you're doing that, how is that affecting the relationship? What result is that getting you? If you're the hero and you're like, I need to rescue this, I need to save the day, I'm always the one that has to save the relationship, I'm always the one that has to solve everything, and then you eventually feel that resentment, how's that working out for you? How is that playing out? What are the effects of that right now in your relationship? And if you're the persecutor and you're saying, enough, I had it, I'm sick of this. I'm sick of you sleeping with this person. I'm sick of you saying that you want out. I'm sick of you hurting me like this. I'm sick of you rejecting me. This isn't right. You need to fix it. And then you go into the demands and the manipulations. Where is that getting you in your relationship, right? And sometimes we can see that we step into multiple of these roles as it goes, you know, as it plays out with your spouse. That's why it's called the drama triangle. And it's in every single drama that's ever been written, right? Like the old Greek dramas to the new sitcoms and so on. We just take these different roles and we play these different parts. And sometimes we're really good at one, or one's the default one that we typically tend to go to. But it just creates a lot of tension. And it's very unhealthy and it's very ineffective for solving problems. And it's very ineffective for ending rejection. So if that's where you are now, what do we do about it, right? Here's the good part. Here's the good news is that you don't have to stay there. And that's exactly what we help our clients do with our PATH method and the pull part here, okay? So instead of pushing and trying to force our spouse to do something or trying to force them not rejecting us anymore, we actually pull them to us. And we do that in a way that feels kind of like a magnet. You know, I've I homeschool or unschool our kids here, and so sometimes we work with magnets. And the other day, I saw my daughter trying to figure out the magnet, putting the two ends together. And that's what we want to do, is like draw it to us in a natural, beautiful way. What happens when you put one end of the magnet the wrong way, right? It totally repels each other. And so you can either repel each other or you can pull yourselves towards each other. And the interesting thing about relationships is they're never stagnant. There's never just this, like, we're here and it's always this one level. We're either in some level and some way, either repelling each other or drawing us closer together. There's really no middle. There's really no like stagnation. It's either one or the other. So we get to choose which one do I want to show up as? What do I want to experience in my relationship, right? All right, so how do we naturally draw our spouse to us so that you actually are naturally drawn together like a magnet? The first thing, and if you guys are familiar with the PATH method, this should sound familiar. Why? Because it works, okay? It works. It's not a magic bullet, It's not like the wave the fairy wand and everything's beautiful. I'm not here to give you guys a fairy tale, but I am here to tell you what works for those that want to know and have a happy, healthy, successful, thriving marriage. So, first part of the PATH method is take the pressure off. Take the pressure off, especially if you're in the demanding, the manipulating, the begging, the pleading, saying they have to work on things. Take the pressure off. When you take the pressure off, your spouse is going to notice. It's going to get their attention. They're going to notice that something's different about you, and you'll actually create space for the thing that you want the most. Okay? Like I said, I work with kids and toddlers a lot, and so forgive me for this analogy, but it really works. So it's kind of like the cat and the mouse thing, right? The cat is chasing the mouse, and that's the game, right? We play that game when we're dating. There's a bit of that fun, like cat and mouse chase of like, I'm, chasing the pursuer, and it's really fun then. It's not fun now. Because what happens is like, you're the cat if you're the one wanting to work on the marriage. They're the mouse if they want out, and they're like, I gotta get away. And you're like, don't go away, because that freaks me out. And I know I've been there too, right? So it freaks us out, and we're like, don't leave. So we chase after them. And what happens when they feel pursued? Doesn't feel safe, so they move further away. You demand that they work on things? No, they're gonna move further away. You say, you have to do this, you have to work on this, you need to do it for, our religion doesn't believe in divorce, you need to do this for the kids, you need to honor your vows, whatever, right? They don't feel safe, they move further away. So what happens? If you've been doing that and they feel pursued, they're the avoider, you're the pursuer, right? You take a big step back, you take the pressure off. What does the mouse do? It notices, where'd the cat go? Even in nature, you can actually see this, and they look around and they're like, what just happened? Do I need to keep running? And they do this pause motion. And that's exactly what Mark and I look for when we're working with you guys and you're in that kind of dynamic. Your spouse is pulling away more and more and more. We look for that pause. That pause is powerful. That pause is for your advantage, okay? Because they're gonna notice, where'd the cat go? Something's different here. The game just changed. Okay, it's not really a game, but in this analogy, a game, right? And then as you put, take the pressure off and they start to notice that, it gets their attention. Then you do the next part here, which is reducing the tension. Reducing the tension. If things have felt volatile, if they felt like everything turns into an argument, if there's been a lot of blame, a lot of hostility, a lot of coldness, a lot of withdrawal, a lot of stonewalling, even apathy, we reduce that tension that you're feeling right now and create a level of safety and a neutral zone. Okay? It doesn't go from, them rejecting you and pulling away and doing all these hurtful things and all the stonewalling or rejection, right? To, you're madly in love overnight. No, we build upon it line upon line, right? Brick by brick, step by step. And the first step is that pause. Then the next step is neutral zone. We want to create a safe, neutral zone where you both feel respected and you both feel like it's okay to talk about things. And not everything's solved right now. And that's where we really build up the health and the strength in the relationship, like I talked about. If you've been pushing for those deep issues to be resolved and your relationship hasn't been strong enough to handle them, now in this neutral zone, we want to create some safety and create a stable foundation underneath both of you. And then as you have this reduced tension, the mouse or your spouse, it's funny that it rhymes to me. Maybe I'll write a children's book about it someday. How to get your spouse to come back to you, your mouse. Anyway, they start to take some steps towards you. So you got them to pause. They're no longer fleeing out the door. They're no longer flying as fast as a bat out of hell, right? They're actually pausing. And then as you create this safety and reduce the tension, they start to take some steps towards you. It's a beautiful thing. It's a weird thing. And I see it happen so often. And I love it. Mark and I look for those markers, those steps along the way to happen, because we know now things are heading in the right direction. So remember the clients I was talking about there? What did I change their names to again? Jaren and Laura, I believe. So when Jaren did this, you know, he took the pressure off instead of the manipulating and the scare tactics and the desperation and, you know, the demands and all of those things. And as he did that, then she paused even more. And then we created some safe zone, right? Where things are no longer threatening. They're no longer volatile. They're no longer argumentative. There's no, you know, in their own words, they talked to me about how they no longer felt defensive, right? They no longer felt defensive. And it would still come up in some of their conversations. They'd be like, oh, I noticed I started to feel defensive. And then they themselves, with, you know, our guidance here, recognized that that was going on. And they were stepping into the drama triangle of defensiveness, victim, hero, persecutor role. And they said, no, we're not doing that anymore. We're going to work on this together. We're going to put down our swords and get on the same side of the table here and actually try to understand each other, which is the next part. Create some more understanding. Increase the understanding. And as you increase your understanding for why they're doing what they're doing and where they're really coming from and how they really feel about that, and you set down your defensiveness and your desire to prove yourself right and your desire to, you know, show them who you really are and all those things, and you actually see where they're coming from, that understanding builds this incredible bridge of respect. And nothing feels better than feeling like you're really understood by someone. So when you give that gift to your spouse and you show them that you're really wanting to understand them, not only do you see where they're coming from, and you can even have compassion or empathy, not sympathy, but empathy for where they're coming from, but that will be a huge drawing the magnet to you with your spouse. They will feel so drawn to you because we all deeply crave feeling understood. And as you feel understood, just that, like, oh my goodness, you understand me. It's like this huge weight off our shoulders. And we feel this amazing sense of relief and an amazing sense of intimacy and closeness. We feel safer with that person. And like we're able to let our guard down because they actually get where we're coming from. More often than not, you'll be fascinated and you'll be amazed and maybe even totally surprised when you realize that they're not really rejecting you. They might be rejecting some of your behaviors or aspects of the relationship, then they're actually rejecting you. The challenge is that when we feel rejected by our spouse, we take it so personal. Take it so personal. It's rejecting me instead of, where are they really coming from? Why are they doing what they're doing? Why are they having this affair? Why do they feel like they need to go somewhere else to get their needs met, or they need to leave the relationship to be happy, or that they can't have romantic feelings for me anymore, right? When we actually see what they're wanting and why they're wanting it, then it's not really so much about us. It's a lot more about them. And that understanding there, once we have that understanding, so now the mouse cat analogy, going back to that for a minute, so they've paused, right? Now they've started to take some steps towards you as things are in a safe, neutral zone. As you increase understanding, now you're in a place that you can make some clear requests, and they can make some clear requests. Clear requests are so powerful. I wish I had known this, you know, 16 years ago when Ben and I first got married. But being able to clearly say, what I need is this, or how I feel is this, and what I'm wanting is this, right? And for your spouse to be able to do the same thing instead of the mind reading and the whole drama triangle, all of that. We just put that aside and we become creators and we say, what I want to create here is this. What I want to experience here is this. Even how I want you to feel is this. And as we have some clear requests, without all the drama, without all the emotion, without all the defensiveness, then we can come to some agreements, right? This is where we get that give and that take. And we find some agreements on how to get those needs met in a way that feels good to both of you, okay? And that is a skill that can be learned. And that's exactly what we teach you and help you do. And now that we know what the agreements are, and sometimes they need to be healthy boundaries, especially in cases of affairs and major broken trust, major broken promises, or just some very unhealthy, destructive behaviors. You know, we're talking like, you know, addictions and, you know, different things like that. So that's when we put those in place. And now is when we can really provide what's needed because we actually understand what's needed. Your spouse understands what's needed. And you're able to work together as a team. As we start to work together as a team, the relationship is now healthy enough to resolve all the underlying root issues, okay? And now you're both willing to work on those things together as a team. And if you've heard any of our client stories, I mean, I just did an interview last week, which was awesome. If you guys didn't hear it, I encourage you to go back and listen to that. She did a fabulous job telling us where she's at, you know, with her husband having an affair and these things. And so when you get to that place, now they're both willing to work on this together. They're willing to see where they're both coming from and to see what needs need to be met and able to work together as a team on that, which is awesome. Excuse me. All right. So, and then another part here that I want you guys just to think about is to look at where you may actually be rejecting them, okay? Or where they may feel rejected, where they may feel shut down or unaccepted by you. Because more often than not, both parties are feeling a lot of the same things. And we only tend to look at our own pain and what's happening to us, right? So maybe step out of that for a minute and look at where you may be unintentionally or intentionally rejecting them. You know, you might be rejecting that they're having this affair and you're just saying, you know, that's wrong and you shouldn't do that. And they feel rejected because they don't feel like you're actually understanding where they're coming from or why they're doing this. And there's nothing that's harder than to feel completely invalidated for how we feel. And the bottom line is you may not like the way that their spouse feels. They don't like the way that you feel, but what they feel is real for them, just like what you feel is real for you. And so when we get to that stage there about increasing understanding, we often talk about with our clients validating where they are. It's not saying that it's right what they're doing. It's not saying that it's justified. It's not saying that it's healthy, but we're saying, I see you for where you are. I see that you don't feel happy here and you feel like you are happier with that other person. I see that. I validate that's true for you. And I validate that, you know, this is how you've been dealing with this. And I validate that you're saying these things. And again, that validation lowers those defense mechanisms and takes us out of the drama triangle and out of the rejection cycle. If you don't want to be rejected anymore, then I really encourage you to listen and see where you can apply these things, okay? Then, above all, there is a major shift that happens when our clients stop looking to their spouse or honestly, any external thing to make them feel better. That is hard to do, but it's a powerful, powerful thing. More often than not, we get into that drama triangle. We want to try to rescue things or we try to feel like a victim and we want something outside of us to make us feel better. We want our spouse to do insert blank so that I can feel secure, so that I can feel accepted, so I can feel loved and accepted and secure in this relationship, right? But the reality is that you cannot control anyone else. You already know that. You cannot control anything else. And when we find internal acceptance, that is where our peace and our power really lies. And everything that we think that we want outside of us is actually already within us. And I know that sounds maybe a little zen, maybe a little cliche, but it is the truth. And you can avoid that and keep looking everywhere else, and you'll never really feel happy. You will always feel hollow. You'll always feel a level of insecurity and anxiety because you're placing your happiness on things that you cannot control. Life happens to all of us, but more often than not, I see so many people just letting life happen to them rather than creating life. And we all know that challenges are going to come. So, are we just going to be a victim to them and let life take us here and there and not have any direction and just let life rip us up to shreds, right? Or are we going to choose who we really want to be and what we really want to experience in this life? And there is an incredible shift. This is my favorite part about working with you guys and my favorite part about this whole process. In fact, it's what drives me every day and what drove me to create this business in the first place and this entire program. Is shifting from a place of needing other people and other things so that I can feel okay to knowing on a deep internal, intrinsic level that I'm okay no matter what. And that client, Jaren, I was just talking to you about is getting to that point right now. And it's a beautiful shift to see happen. And it's like, I have so much peace. I feel better about myself. I feel better about my life. I feel better about my circumstances. I feel empowered. And not only do you feel empowered and you feel calm and you feel centered and you feel like, you know what? No matter what happens, it's all going to be okay. It really is. I had to get to that place. I was just describing this to a family member recently with cancer that I couldn't control this thing. It was bigger than me. And so I had to surrender it. And for me, I put it into God's hands and I said, no matter what, I trust you. And no matter what, it's okay. And that's when the need to try to control things and the need to like resist things and all the stress and the pressure and the fear of everything that you're going through leaves. And you're left with nothing but peace. And that's a beautiful place to be. And that's why I do this work, is to help people that are in pain, in cycles and subconsciously, they don't even realize what they're creating here to step out of that and find who they really are and find that peace of empowerment. So, not only do you feel better when you're in that state, and that's worth everything, right? But you're also more attractive, right? Like, so if you want this person in your life, instead of going after them, chasing them, pursuing them, demanding, resolving root issues too soon, all those things that just don't work, you're wanting to draw them back to you. And when you are a person that's very empowered and at peace and centered and happy no matter what, that's attractive. Like we like to be around those kind of people. And your spouse is more often than not going to want to be around you because you feel safe and you feel secure. And that's sexy. Right, we want to be that kind of person. We like to be around those kind of people. So you want your spouse to come back to you, then that is a really amazing place to be. And at the same time, you actually like don't have any pressure about it because you're like, I'm okay no matter what. And so then it's not just this pursuit of this person and this pursuit of trying to make you feel better by certain circumstances happening, like your spouse coming back and all these things. It's like, I'm okay no matter what. And wow, what a blessing. Because now this person wants to be with me, and it only adds to and magnifies the amount of joy that you feel. And you feel absolute love, acceptance, and connection with this person. And you have absolute love, acceptance, and connection with yourself. So if you're experiencing a lot of rejection in your marriage, where might you also be rejecting yourself? And how can you shift that to become a person that knows who they are and where they're going in this life? This is a little poetic. Okay, but I wrote this down today as I was working out, and I think it's very true. So the thunder of the storm is deafening, but the rain is what makes the flowers grow. It just came to me. I like to write and I love poetry, but the thunder is deafening in the storm, but the rain makes the flowers grow. It's about to rain here in Colorado. I hope it does. Maybe snow, but it's true. Like the storm is scary and the storm is hard, but the storms of life come to all of us, and through those storms is what beautifies and purifies and nourishes the earth so that it can be the amazing, beautiful place that it is. And so the challenges of life are going to come to all of us. So I want to ask you, As you're looking at this challenge in your life, what can you learn from this? Ask yourself, what can I learn from this? What flowers are going to grow from this experience? How can I become better? When you choose to look at the challenges in your life as blessings and opportunities, everything will change for you, rather than feeling like a victim and that it just keeps happening. And if you choose that, it will just keep happening and you will stay stuck and you will be in pain, and it's okay. You can choose that, and many, many people do. Or you can choose to say, I'm going to grow through this. I'm not just going to go through this. I'm going to grow through this. And I'm going to look back and I'm going to say, I'm so grateful that happened. It was really hard. You know, it was the hardest thing I've ever done, but I'm so grateful for it, because look at where I am now. And I wouldn't be who I am now if it wasn't for going through that and choosing to learn from it and become a better person through it. So in a nutshell, my friends, pull methods, they're all about making things safe and comfortable for your spouse so that they stop running. We look for that pause. If your spouse has not put the pause button on this thing yet, we need to get you there, and we need to get you there quickly because time's not on your side, okay? And then creating positive experiencing, creating that safe neutral zone so that you both feel safe and respected, and you have an ability to be able to have this neutral ground so that they actually want to start to take some steps towards you. Then from there, we're building trust step by step so you both feel safe and secure. We increase that understanding so they actually want to spend time with you and they want to work on things with you. And making sure this whole time they don't feel used or manipulated, you don't feel used or manipulated, you no longer feel rejected, they no longer feel rejected. That is how we help our clients and can help you help your spouse naturally be pulled to you. Remember, like the magnet? It is. It acts like a magnet drawing you back together when you have the right method and when you're going about it the right way. It feels good. It feels right. It feels lasting because it is. It is. So Mark and I, we put together an awesome resource that you guys can use to get started with this. In addition to listening to this podcast again, it's just a guide kind of like breaking all of that down for you guys. And it's the do's and don'ts to reconnect with your spouse. Okay. So maybe that could be a good next step for you to really dig in and ask yourself some questions about how you're showing up with this rejection in your marriage and where you really want to go. So if you want that free guide, just leave a comment, say me. That was super original. I couldn't think of anything else. So just say me, I want the guide or something like that. And then we'll send it to you. If you're on Spotify or like iTunes podcast or something like that, then try to, you know, go over to the Thriving Marriage Facebook group, personally message me. I answer all my messages as fast as I can. I do get a lot, but I do get back to you guys, and I'm happy to send you that guide as well. So that's the do's and don'ts to reconnect with your spouse. If you're watching live on Facebook or YouTube, just say me, or I want the guide. Give it to me, whatever you want to say there, and I'll make sure that I get that guide over to you guys. All right. Now, just as a little bit of announcement, last week we did our Halloween edition of our Path Marriage Coaching Program, our Save Your Marriage by Christmas, and we filled up every single spot. They are sold out, so that's super awesome. I was hoping that I could offer you guys a few spots today because it's an incredible program to save your marriage by Christmas. And you know, right now we're just had a Halloween. Woo! Yeah, we had Halloween on Sunday. Oh my goodness, I got lost in time this weekend. My husband and I actually went up to the hot springs and I totally truly lost time. So it was a beautiful weekend. All right, so because we filled up every single one of those spots, I was hoping I could offer you guys one or two today, but they're just gone. So congratulations to everyone who joined that, and I'm excited to help you guys get there by Christmas. But we did graduate one couple this week that had joined earlier in the summer. And so I actually have one spot open for our Path Coaching Program that helps you have a thriving, connected marriage in less than 6 months. Even if your spouse, even if they're not currently working on it, they say, I'm not on board, we help you get there. That's what this is for. So if that sounds like you and you want to get that last open spot, it's just one right now. We just had one client graduate. So it's highthrivecoaching.com/apply. That's where you can go apply for that coaching spot and learn a little bit more about what that program is and all the details about it. So I give this URL almost every single week because we bring on new clients, we graduate clients, we just actually hired a new coach, so that's super awesome. But highthrivecoaching.com/apply. Okay, So go ahead and go over there. If you're listening to this later, I can't guarantee that we have any opening spots, but I encourage you just to check it out and apply as soon as you can, because spots do fill up really, really, really fast, as you guys all know. All right, with that being said, a few minutes left, I'm gonna go over to our marriage myth buster. And this one again came from a comment here in our Thriving Marriage Facebook group. So appreciate you guys for sharing where you guys are at. And here it is. All right. It shouldn't be hard to feel close to your spouse. This person was, you know, and there's been a couple comments similar to this, like, why is it just so hard? Like, I should just be able to be close to them. Why are they pushing me away? Which goes along really well with the whole rejection thing, right? But that it really shouldn't be hard to feel close to your spouse. And so I'm going to say yes and no to this one, right? But I think where this myth comes from, and kind of where this person probably was at, is this like fairy tale culture, right? We all grew up with like Disney princesses. I was obsessed with Belle as a kid. So I get it. Like, we have this feeling like it's just gonna all end happily ever after. And a big misconception about relationships is that the honeymoon phase is supposed to last your entire marriage. Like, we should just always feel head over heels in love. We should always have butterflies and be on cloud nine. And if I don't feel that level of passion and that level of connection and everything's just going so great, well, then something's wrong. And so I should just move on to someone else so I can feel that way again. And the reality is that that's not how a relationship works long term. Mark and I did a great podcast of, I don't even know, 4 weeks ago or something, on the different phases of marriage. The different life phases of marriage as you go through life, and these, you know, peaks and valleys, but it's a beautiful journey. It's a beautiful journey. And like I said, the challenges that come, they come to teach us, and we can see the flowers grow from the storms, right? And the other side is when we only want the honeymoon phase, and that's all we think that there is then we bounce around from one person to another person to another person, or from one thing to another thing to another thing, and we're craving this one feeling, and we miss out on the real jewels of a lifelong love, of a love that's born from hardship, a love that stands the test of time, a love that is forged in the fire of affliction and adversity. And to have a thriving marriage no matter what. And so, okay, so let's go back to why is it hard to feel close to our spouse? So we all get it, like there's different responsibilities and pressures after the honeymoon phase that can make it hard to feel close and connected. Life gets in the way, we have maybe poor problem solving skills, maybe poor communication skills, and we just go through different challenges with ourselves and with our spouse. Sometimes it's a health challenge, sometimes it's a child, you know, sometimes it's a job or an economic thing, and that can, those stresses and those pressures can make it really hard. And above all, we all have like limiting beliefs about ourselves that also make it really hard. I'm not gonna go super deep into that right now, but you guys know me and I do it, so go listen to other podcasts too if you want more on that. But the bottom line is that that's normal. Like, it's normal to not always feel super close to your spouse, and that sometimes it's hard to feel close to them. But the reality is that it is, and that's normal. So you're normal. What prevents us from feeling close to our spouse for extended amounts of time, right? Broken trust, major broken trust, broken promises, major rejection, like we just talked about. No ability to give and receive feedback in a healthy manner. In other words, poor communication. We often talk about poor communication, but it's really poor understanding and poor problem solving. It's poor ability to communicate something clearly, like those clear requests that we talked about, right? Mark talks a lot about being able to give and receive feedback about issues, right? Like, I felt this way when you did that, right? And then ability to work through and resolve those problems. Also, you know, not giving your marriage enough priority. Everything, you talk about the flowers from the storm, but everything is going to need nourishing. It's going to need to be a priority. It's going to need to be taken care of if it's important to you. When the marriage isn't given enough of a priority, then it's even more hard to feel close, right? And then, of course, we talk here a lot in our PATH method about the narrative that you both have about the relationship. If you have a really negative narrative about your spouse, a negative belief about them, if they have a negative belief about you, a negative story about you, that again becomes another one of those stumbling blocks to feeling really close, and also leads to more rejection that we talked about, right? So with our method, what we do, instead of feeling like broken trust has prevented us from feeling close, is that we heal that trust, right? We heal it in the right order. We create that health in the relationship so you both feel safe and secure. We put in those healthy boundaries to make sure that that happens. And instead of, you know, not being able to give and receive feedback, having poor communication, misunderstandings, a lot of defensiveness, a lot of blame, a lot of volatility, or stonewalling, right, and rejection, we build understanding, we build connection, and have a healthy way to give and receive that feedback, right? And then you both prioritize the marriage and provides what's needed, oh my goodness, provide what is needed for each other so you feel closer to your spouse over the years and not more distant. That's a reality. You can experience it that. And that's exactly what Mark's doing with his wife and I'm doing with my husband and what we help our clients do as well, is that you actually feel closer and more connected and more unified, more trusting, more secure, more accepted for who you really are over the years, and you don't have to just get more and more distant. And you both work together as a team to co-create a life that feels good, it feels happy, it feels healthy, and it feels like something you want and you even crave for both of you. So, is that hard to do? Yes. Yes, it is. Yes, it is because we haven't been taught how to do this. Yes, it is because it does require time and energy. And yes, it is because if you've been in some really unhealthy patterns and your spouse is pulling further away from you, there's work to be done. It is hard. I'm not here to sugarcoat it. I'm not going to give you a fairy tale. But so is divorce. Divorce is hard. Feeling disconnected is hard. Feeling lonely is hard. Lying next to your spouse and being only 2 feet away, but feeling like you could be worlds apart, is the loneliest place in the world to be. Feeling unhappy, unfulfilled, needs unmet, unsatisfied, feeling rejection, that is hard. So choose your hard. They're both hard. Choose which one you want. We're here to help you along the way. So thank you for joining me today. I hope and pray that this was helpful for you and that something spoke to your heart and your mind that's going to lead you to make some new choices so that you can experience some new things in your relationship. And I know that that will have a ripple effect, not only in your life, your spouse's life, your children's lives, your friends' lives, your family, your circle of influence. It'll expand, 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 expand. You have no idea how the choices you make today could affect generations and truly affect the world. So I encourage you to lean into that and decide who you really want to be and what kind of relationship you want to experience in this life. And we're here to help you get there. So with that being said, next week, we're going to talk about something super exciting. Mark and I have had a exclusive client-only training about ending an affair in less than 3 weeks. But we're going to pull back the curtain next week and show you just enough about how to end an affair in 3 weeks or less. So if you're going through an affair and you want your spouse to end that affair, or you're currently going through an affair yourself and you want to be able to step away from it and have your spouse step away from their affair, then we'll talk about how to do that in 3 weeks or less next time. Thank you for joining me. My heart, my love, my appreciation goes out to you. Have a wonderful, beautiful day.
Thanks for listening to The Thriving Marriage, your A to Z blueprint for not just surviving marriage, but thriving. Until next time, my friends, thrive on.